Chapter 11. The Maelstrom. The covenant of blood drifted through the roiling void, no longer buffeted by the tides of the true warp, yet still shivering in the weak currents of, well, of whatever this place was. Octavia wasn't sure. She reached up to check her bandana, as if to reassure herself it was still there, still blocking her secret sight. As the daughter of a navigator bloodline, she was hardly unfamiliar with the way the Sea of Souls spilled over into the material universe. Rifts in space were rare, but each was an ugly, dangerous scab, a tormenting hazard to stellar navigation, avoided by every navigator with a desire to keep their sanity intact and their ship in one piece. It was the warp and natural space amalgamated in defiance of physical laws, a thinner breed of the former, a haunted, twisted reflection of the latter. They'd already sailed past several worlds, through the heart of three systems. On one of the worlds, the oceans had boiled, visible even from orbit. Unnatural storms plagued the planet's face, raining piss, acid, and blood onto the continents below. Space itself was corrupted. She watched the bank of screens before her, seeing a thousand shades of violet and red pressing against the external lenses. The mess outside the hull clashed and swirled with the repellent properties of oil and water, always colliding, bonding without mixing. Her staring eyes interpreted the colorful dance as a liquid mist, thick enough to make the ship shudder, thin enough to show the stars beyond. If she stared long enough, she could make out the suggestions of faces and fingers in the ooze, screaming, reaching, dissolving. Some seemed to taunt her with their maddening familiarity. She swore she saw Carton Sign at one point, the last captain she'd served, and more than once the rippling tides resolved into the face of her oldest brother, Lanik, dead these last 6 years after his trader vessel was warp-lost on the eastern fringe.
"Why do you watch, mistress?"
one of her attendants asked. She glanced at the wretch, who was unhealthily tall and sexless in its overcloak, keeping its face behind stained bandages. Several others lurked close to the door, whispering amongst themselves. It was impossible not to smell their sweat, their stinking blood-stained bandages, and the rancid oil blood of their bionics.
"Because," she said, "it's like the warp, but I can see it with my human eyes."
How to explain the difference to one not born to a navigator bloodline? Impossible. One of her attendants trudged closer.
"Mistress," the hunched figure said.
"Hello, hound. Could you get rid of the others?"
She didn't say it was because of the smell. Hound didn't exactly come across as a floral garden himself, and she couldn't recall the last time she had a chance to bathe either. As Hound shooed the other attendants from her chamber, Octavia stared back at the screens. The ship was passing a cloudless planet that looked to be made of rusted iron. Whatever its true form, the maelstrom had warped the world into a visage of grinding continental plates formed from scrap. Octavia stared at the great canyons carved into the planet's face, wondering what it would be like to walk on such a world.
"Koshia, say," a female voice said behind her.
She was out of the throne in a heartbeat, spinning and drawing her pistol, aiming at...
"Now that's a curious welcome," said Septimus.
He rested his hands at his gun belt, thumbs hooked into the leather strap.
"Have I annoyed you in some unforeseen way?"
"How long have you been standing there?"
Octavia narrowed her eyes.
"When did you come in?"
"Hound let me in a moment ago. He's outside with Maruk and the rest of your Nishalitha coterie."
Now that word she did know, Nishalitha, poisonous. Septimus came closer, and she let him pluck the gun from her hands. This close, he smelled of fresh sweat, and the coppery oils he used to maintain First Claw's weapons. After placing her gun on the seat of her throne, he took her hands in his own, the beaten fingerless leather gloves wrapping her grubby, pale fingers.
"What's wrong?" he asked. "Your hands are very cold."
He was a head taller than her. She had to look up to meet his eyes, and the fall of his hair covered most of the chromed augmetics at his cheek and temple.
"This whole ship is cold," she replied.
It was difficult not to be aware of just how close he was now. She'd not been this close to another person in months, not since Talos had carried her from the prison facility. And that had been a cold salvation, relief permeating her more than any real comfort. This was human contact, the close warmth of a real person, not a towering fanatic in growling armor plating, or a hunched mutant with his eyes sewn shut.
"What is it?" he asked.
The traces of blonde stubble marked his jawline, where he'd not shaved in the last 2 days. Worry stained his features. She thought it again, despite herself. He'd be handsome, if he wasn't a heretic, if the darkness of this ship didn't run in his blood.
"I'm not used to being touched."
She tilted her head, little realizing how imperious she suddenly looked. Her breeding as a noble scion of Terra wasn't as far behind her as she believed. He released her hands, though not immediately. Slowly, his fingers unlocked from trapping hers, and the warmth he brought receded.
"Forgive me," he said. "Sometimes I forget your unique upbringing." "That's one of the reasons I put up with you," she smiled. "What did you say when you came in?"
It broke the moment. Septimus narrowed his good eye, and the augmetic lens clicked and whirred as it struggled to mirror the movement.
"I didn't say anything. I entered and merely watched. You looked peaceful for once. I hesitated to disturb you." "Koshia say," she said it softly. "What does it mean?"
"It means to beware," said Septimus. "Or more literally, it is a slang threat from the Legion's home world. A warning given to those soon to die. Breathe now." "The implication is simple. Breathe while you still can."
"Yes, I got that," she faked a smile. "Charming culture."
Septimus shrugged, his jacket rustling.
"Nostramon gutter threats. The lords speak them often. Did you hear it from one of the crew?"
"Stop worrying."
She shook her head, giving him her best, most convincingly irritated glare.
"And get your hands off your guns. I'm not a child, needing to be defended on the Skolam playground every time you hear someone calling me a name."
He looked away, suddenly awkward.
"I did not mean to imply anything."
"It's fine," she said,
her tone suggesting quite the opposite.
"Just forget it."
"As you wish,"
he offered her a polite bow.
"I sense you wish to be alone, so I will comply."
"Wait!"
He halted, and she cleared her throat.
"I mean, wait a moment. Did you want something? You don't come here much anymore."
She tried to keep the last comment casual, purging it of anything beyond neutrality. She wasn't entirely successful. She saw it in the way he looked at her.
"The Exalted ordered your isolation," he said, "and I have been attending to my own duties. Maruk needed training. We had 5 suits of ceramite warplate to restore, as well as First Claw's weapons."
Octavia brushed his excuses away.
"So, did you want something?"
He frowned.
"Forgive me, I am not sure I understand why you are so terse tonight.
I wish to see you. Nothing more?
He reached a hand into his jacket pocket, leaving it in there. After an awkward moment, he asked, How are you feeling? So it was going to be like that. Typical. The very last thing she needed.
Can you just relax, please, for once? I'm not sure I can deal with your formal manners tonight, Septimus. I need a friend, not another handler. Choose which one you are, please, and stick to it.
His jaw tightened, and she felt a guilty thrill of victory. She'd struck a mark there.
It's not formality, he replied. It's called respect.
Whatever it is, I prefer it when you leave it at the door.
She forced a smile, retying her ponytail.
Have you looked out the window recently? Metaphorically speaking.
I try not to. You should probably do the same.
Instead of elaborating, he walked around her chamber, stepping over clothing and screwed up balls of paper from her many failed attempts to keep a journal.
When was the last time you cleaned this chamber? Yet again it appears you lost a fight with a storm in here.
It's not that bad.
By the standards of the slaveholds, yes, it's quite the princess's palace.
He drew his hand from his pocket and tossed something to her.
For you.
Octavia caught it in both hands, a tiny bundle no larger than her thumb, wrapped in blue cloth. The material looked ripped from a Legion slave uniform. She glanced at Septimus, but he was busy turning off her 2 dozen monitors, one by one. Slowly, she opened the ragged cloth. A ring sat in the palm of her hand, a circle of light, creamy ivory with elegant, minuscule Nostraman runes branded onto the surface.
Oh,
she said, for want of anything better to say. She didn't know whether she should feel pleased, shocked, or confused. All she knew for certain was that she felt all three.
It's to thank you.
Septimus deactivated the last view screen.
For Cryth. When you helped us run, rather than kill us all.
Oh,
she said again.
I traded for it, he said. In black market, of course.
He moved back over to her, standing by her throne.
They're very rare. The material is difficult to cut into jewelry. Only those with access to machines are able to do it.
She turned it over in her hands, unable to read the spidery Nostraman.
What's it made from?
Bone. From a blood angel. One of the enemy warriors that died on board.
Octavia looked up at him again.
You bought me a gift made from the bones of an imperial hero.
It wasn't a question, nor was it spoken with a smile. He smiled, though.
When you put it like that,
I don't want it.
She offered it back to him.
You're unbelievable.
She shook her head as she met his eyes.
You're also an idiot and a heretic.
He didn't take it back. He just walked away, nudging a pile of junk with the side of his boot.
All of those accusations are true.
Anger was getting the better of her now. But she let it flow, guiding her in cautious words.
Was this supposed to impress me?
Septimus hesitated.
Impress you? To what end?
She glowered.
You know to what end?
His laughter annoyed her even more.
You're serious, he said, and laughed again. Get out,
she smiled thinly,
before I shoot you.
He didn't leave. He came back over to her, taking her hand and slowly, carefully bringing her dirty knuckles to his lips. The kiss was as soft as the memory of a breeze.
That is not how this works, Octavia. You are the most precious mortal commodity on this vessel, and a death sentence hangs over anyone that angers you, for you are the Legion's favorite prize. You are beautiful, the only beauty in this sunless world. But it has not crossed my mind to do anything more than watch you from afar. Why would I have ever considered it?
He seemed genuinely amused, holding her by the hand as he spoke.
I am not one to chase uncatchable prey. My normal duties are difficult enough.
She still scowled up at him, resisting the need to lick her dry lips. His stare wasn't annoying, but she told herself it was.
You should go, she told him,
her voice caught on the words. Thrown, he had the darkest eyes. Well, one, anyway. The lens was half covered by his scruffy hair.
Besides, I heard a tale, he lowered his voice, that humans die from a navigator's kiss. That sounds like a legend to me, she said, looking up at him. But you never know.
She tilted her head, her lips parting slightly.
Navigators are dangerous creatures. Don't ever trust one.
He trailed a thumb along her jawline, not saying anything. Octavia drew a breath and froze as the door opened on grinding tracks. After a split second, she stepped back from Septimus in an awkward hop, thumping her backside into her writing desk. Hound lumbered in, followed by Maruk. The older man looked like a beggar in his disheveled slave uniform. He gave her a shy wave, sensing he was intruding.
Mistress, her attendant said. Mistress, forgive me.
It's fine, she refused to look at Septimus. It's fine. What is it? What's wrong?
A guest, mistress. I could not refuse him entry.
One of the Legion's warriors stalked into the room. His midnight armor caught what little light existed, its polished surface painted with bolts of lightning, akin to veins along the ceramite. His bare face was thin, unscarred, with emotive eyes despite their rich blackness. He was smiling, though only slightly.
Lord Sirion, Septimus bowed.
Septimus, the warrior greeted him. We dock tonight. You are needed in the preparation chambers.
Sirion gestured to Maruk with a growl of armor joints.
You too, Nonus. The thrills of hard labor await, my dear artificers.
As the humans walked from the room, Sirion looked over at the flushed navigator. She seemed to be intrigued by a few scraps of paper on her desk, judiciously avoiding looking at anyone else.
So,
he said to Octavia,
how are you?
Hell's Iris welcomed them 2 hours later, with no shortage of posturing. Frigates declaring themselves as outriders for the Blood Reaver's fleet pulled into formation with the limping Covenant, escorting the larger cruiser closer to the station. On the bridge, the Exalted sat enthroned, flanked by Garadon and Malek of the Atramentar in their hulking Terminator warplate. The human crew worked around them, busy with the mathematical intricacies of guiding the massive warship into port.
We made it, the creature drawled.
Malek inclined his head in a purring growl of armor joints. His tusked helm swung to face his master.
Now comes the hard part, staying alive until we leave.
The Exalted grunted in acknowledgement, as Hell's Iris grew larger on the Oculus. It galled it to admire what it was seeing, but the Tyrant's resources were second only to the Despoilers in scope and might. Hell's Iris triggered a very specific jealousy within the demon's heart, for its past as much as what it represented now. The port was a nexus of secessionist activity, and it was far from the largest waypoint in the Tyrant's empire.
The station itself had once been the Ramillies-class void fortress Kanan's Eye, positioned in deep space, controlled by the Astral Claws chapter. When indignity and betrayal swept through the region centuries before, during the Badab War, the fortress became one of many assets claimed by the rebels in their drive to secede from the Imperium. Imperial archives listed Kanan's Eye as destroyed by a battle fleet led by the Overlord-class cruiser Aquiline. What Terran records failed to state was the subsequent recapture and towing of the Ramillies hulk into the Maelstrom warp rift by the piratical renegades that rose in the wake of the Astral Claws' subjugation. Centuries of raiding had only added to the rebuilt station. It sprawled in space around the dead, warp-corrupted world of Irokol, its metal halls home to tens of thousands of souls, serving as a port for hundreds of ships.
"My skin crawls to return here," Marlek admitted. "Too many ships," said Garadon. "Even for Hell's Iris, this is too many."
The Exalted nodded once, its eyes never leaving the Oculus. Massive cruisers suckled at the station's fuel feeds, while smaller destroyers and frigates sailed at the outpost's perimeters. A continent of steel, populated by carrion feeders.
"Euron himself is here. Nothing else explains the presence of so many warships in his colors,"
Marlek grunted.
"That will not make our dealings any easier."
The Exalted ground its teeth together.
"Master of Auspex, sweep this fleet."
"Aye, my lord," a human officer called back. The command deck doors rumbled open, admitting two more Legion warriors, Talos and Lucorophus, the former striding in with his weapons sheathed, the latter crawling with all the monstrous grace of a gargoyle.
"Blood of the Legion," Talos swore as he saw the Oculus. "What have we sailed into?"
"A sea of sharks," Lucorophus hissed. "Very bad, very, very bad."
Belatedly, Talos made his salute to the Atramentar warriors on the Exalted's dais. Lucorophus didn't bother. He prowled around the bridge, disconcerting the mortal crew by staring at them. His painted, crying faceplate watched with unblinking intensity.
"Greetings," he leered at one officer.
Even hunched on all fours, Lucorophus was the height of the mortal man, and four times as bulky in his warplate, with its back-mounted thrusters.
"Hail, my lord," the officer replied.
He was a gunnery rating, clad in a faded Imperial Navy uniform stripped of insignia, his silvering hair thinning at the crown. Despite half a lifetime in the Legion's service, indeed in the Exalted's presence, attracting the direct attention of a master was still something to make even the most jaded soul start sweating.
"I am Lucorophus," the raptor called, "of the Bleeding Eyes."
"I know who you are, my lord."
The warrior crawled closer, its weeping eye lenses somehow alive with cold delight. The officer instinctively inched away.
"Do not run. That would be unwise. Bad things happen to humans who turn their backs on me."
The officer swallowed.
"How may I serve you, lord?"
"You are not of the home world. Your eyes are not pure."
"I was taken," the officer cleared his throat. "I was taken years ago in a raid. I serve loyally, my lord."
"You are not of the home world,"
Lucorophus hissed.
"Then you have never heard the hunting call of an Astraman condor."
The raptor's neck twitched, causing a growl of joint servos. A second shadow, a taller one, fell over the mortal's face. He managed a salute and the words,
"Lord Talos,"
fell from his lips. Lucorophus turned on his claws. Talos stood behind him, his armor bedecked in skulls and blood angel helms.
Soul Hunter?
Please do not call me that.
Talos gestured to the officer.
This man's name is Antion. He has served us 23 standard years in the destruction of exactly 87 Imperial vessels, and more raids than I care to remember. Is that not true, Gunnery Officer Antion Kessa?
The officer saluted again.
It is true, my lord.
Talos nodded, looking back down at Lucarifus.
We do not toy with the lives of those that serve us, Raptor.
His gauntlet rested on Malkarion's bolter, maglocked to his thigh.
That would be counterproductive.
The mortal and I were merely having a conversation.
Lucarifus's voice hinted at a smile behind the demonic faceplate.
The mortal has a duty to do. If we need to open fire, I would prefer all of our gunnery officers to be able to do so, rather than have them distracted in conversations with you.
Lucarifus gave a cackle and crawled away, armor joints snarling.
Thank you, my lord,
the officer said quietly, saluting again.
Thank you.
Those words again, twice in one year. Talos almost smiled at the thought.
Back to your duties, Kessa.
He moved away, returning to the Exalted's raised dais. A rune flickered on his retinal display. Incoming message. The name glyph signified Malik of the Atramenta. Talos blinked at the icon to activate it.
Nicely done,
Malik voxed.
Raptors, replied Talos. Those things should be leashed.
And muzzled, Malik agreed. Brother, a warning. The Exalted is uneasy. Huron is here, at Hell's Iris.
Understood.
Talos cancelled the link standing on the steps leading up to the throne. Only the Atramentar and the Exalted itself were permitted to stand at the top of the dais.
Auspex scan complete, the Master of Vox called.
The Exalted's eyes were closed. It reached its senses beyond the heavy, cold hull, feeling the drifting warp wind as the Covenant adjusted its course by guidance thrusters. The escorting frigates broke formation and pulled away, rejoining the patrolling fleet.
Something,
the Exalted sensed it out there.
Something familiar. Speak,
the creature demanded. Its black eyes flicked open.
Ignore the names and classes of individual craft. Tell me only what matters.
My lord, the enemy fleet is...
They are not our enemy,
the Exalted snapped.
Yet. Continue.
The Corsair force is of considerable strength, but with unconventional fleet disposition. Many cruisers lack support craft, and several frigates and destroyers seem to lack any larger cohesion. This is a mustering of several flotillas with at least 9 marks of allegiance spread across various craft. They appear to be composed of renegade Adeptus Astartes chapters and defected Imperial Navy vessels.
No,
the Exalted growled.
There is something else at work here.
The demon stared into the oculus, its talons clicking at keys on the armrests of its throne, cycling through external views.
There,
it barked, baring its teeth.
That ship is no Red Corsair vessel, no matter what its colors claim.
It registers as the Venomous Birthright.
The Exalted shook its horned, tusked head again.
No, probe deeper, peel back the layers of Auspex deception.
Focused scanning, my lord.
The Exalted narrowed its glinting eyes, unable to break its stare. The vessel was a weapon of crenellated, gothic beauty, a sister to the Covenant of Blood, born of the same design and craftsmanship.
whereas the Covenant's hull echoed from the earliest ages of the Great Crusade, before the full homogenization wrought by the standard template constructs of Mars. Much of the Corsair fleet was wrought from the more codified principles of construction instituted on Mars in the last 10 millennia. The Venomous Birthright obeyed no such strictures. It could only have been born in the naively prosperous centuries of the Crusade itself, or in the bloody hate-fueled decade of the Horus Heresy. Whichever was true, it traced its roots to an era before the rest of this fleet had even been conceived.
My lord,
the officer sounded uneasy.
Speak. The ship's transponder code has been altered. I read signs of encryption scarring in its identity broadcasts.
Break them now.
Aye, my lord.
The Exalted closed its eyes again, reaching out with its hidden sense. With deceivingly gentle caresses, it ran ethereal feelers over the warship's hull, smoothing its psychic sense over the armored contours. Yes, the vessel was old, ancient even, so much older than these other craft. Its pedigree was a noble one, and it had sailed the stars since the Great Betrayal 10,000 years before.
Greetings, Void Hunter,
the Exalted whispered to the craft.
You are no weapon of the thin-blooded Corsairs. You are older, greater, and were once something so much more.
Something within the ship, some cold fire core of intelligence, responded with a predatory snarl. Its presence was Goliath, its emotions too alien to contain within a human or even demonic mind. Yet for all its immensity, it spared no more than a second's attention for the psychic intrusion.
Be gone,
its immense heart demanded.
Little flesh thing.
The second of connection was enough. The Exalted pulsed back into the body it wore, opening its eyes to see the bridge once more.
My lord, the encryption was crude. I've managed to pierce it, and the vessel is...
I know what it is,
the Exalted growled.
Or rather, what it was. Did you ascertain its former name?
Aye, my lord.
Speak it for all to hear.
The original identity signifier reads as the Echo of Damnation.
The Atramentar warriors tensed by the throne's sides, and Lucariphus released a hissing stream of Nostraman invective. The Exalted gave a wet, grinding chuckle, feeling the name set Vandred's spirit writhing within.
Yes, it grunted. There, my brothers, is the reality of the carrion feeders we are dealing with. The Corsairs, in their endless expansions, have claimed one of the 8th Legion's warships. Look upon it and tell me your thoughts.
It was Talos who spoke.
Some sins will not be allowed to stand.
He faced the Exalted, his words burning with conviction even through the crackling of his helm's vox speakers.
That's our ship.
The Prophet clenched his teeth behind his faceplate.
And we are not leaving until we take it back.
Even in dock, the Maelstrom's void tides rippled against the Covenant. Their gentle crashing formed from etheric energies cooled in the icy nothingness of true space. The crew couldn't help but hear the polluted solar winds caressing the warship's hull. And despite all he'd seen and heard in the last 10 years, it set Septimus's teeth on edge. He checked his pistols, thumbing the ammunition runes to check their power cells.
Nonus, he said.
Maruk clicked his tongue, not quite tutting.
I'm not sure I'll be able to get used to that.
It's not that difficult, I assure you.
Septimus handed him one of the pistols.
Have you ever fired one of these?
The older man scratched at his unshaven jawline, which was well on its way to being buried beneath an itchy grey beard.
Of course not.
Well,
this is how you do it.
Septimus raised his pistol, mimed the activation, and dry-fired three times.
It's not difficult. These were designed for use in the Imperial Guard, so they are far from complicated.
Hey!
Septimus raised an eyebrow.
Yes?
Don't you be mocking the Guard, son. They're heroes, one and all.
Septimus smiled.
Your perspective tends to change when your masters decorate their armor with Imperial Guard skulls for months after each encounter with them.
I wanted to be Guard, you know.
Septimus let it drop.
As I was saying, keep this weapon with you at all times. Hell's Iris is a particularly unpleasant port.
Maruk, he still couldn't think of himself as Nonnus, blinked twice.
We're going ashore?
Of course we are.
Septimus leashed his machete to his shin.
We have a duty to do. This place is dangerous. But if we tread with care, no harm will come to us.
Is Octavia coming?
Septimus gave him a look.
She's a navigator. The Legion can't risk her in a hellhole like this.
But it can risk you and me.
The slave grinned.
Can and will. Come, let's get this over with.
First Claw crossed the umbilical corridor into the station, to be met by a contingent of the Tyrant's warriors blocking the opposite bulkhead. Their ceramite warplate, rendered in red, black, and bronze, was a riotous contrast to the midnight and bone worn by the Night Lords.
Nobody say anything foolish,
Talos warned First Claw over the vox.
As if we ever would,
Sirion replied. Each of them openly carried their weapons drawn and ready, mirroring the posture of the red corsairs ahead.
Halt!
The squad leader demanded. His horned helm regarded each of the Night Lords in turn.
What brings you to Hell's Iris?
Zarl snorted, resting his immense chain blade on his shoulder.
I have a question of my own. Why do you thin-blooded little mongrels not kneel before warriors of the First Legions?
Talos took a breath.
You are an absolute gift to diplomacy, brother.
Zarl just grunted in reply.
Was that supposed to be humorous? The Corsair leader asked.
Talos ignored the question.
We need repairs. I am charged by my commander to speak with Lord Huron.
The Corsairs exchanged glances, most abstained from wearing their helms, leaving their scarred faces on hideous display. Talos marked the emblems of the powers cut and branded into facial flesh. Such devotion. Such ardent, fevered devotion.
I know your ship, the Corsair leader said. I remember the Covenant of Blood and I remember you, Prophet. Your actions last time you walked these halls have earned you no friends.
If you know us, then further introductions are pointless, said Talos. Now, let us pass.
I'm gatemaster for this dock, the Corsair growled through his helm's vox speakers. It would be wise for you to show a little respect.
And we, Acutian pointed out, were waging the long war for several thousand years before you were born. Respect goes both ways, renegade.
The Corsairs bristled, clutching their bolters tighter.
Where was this vaunted respect? Last time you walked within our domain. I have warriors that still carry scars from the last time we met. What if I choose to send you back to the junker you arrived in?
That would be unwise. Lord Huron is expecting us.
Talos reached to unlock the seals at his collar, pulling his helm free with a hiss of vented air pressure. The corridor reeked of stale bodies and armor oils, with the faintest hint of something sulphurous beneath. He looked at the corsairs, black eyes taking them in one by one.
"I appreciate the blow to your pride," Talos said. "We were less than courteous guests when we last came this way. But your master has already made his intentions clear by escorting us into dock. He wishes to see us. So if we could dispense with the posturing, nobody needs to die this time. We will go past you, or we will go through you."
The corsairs raised their weapons as one, bolter stocks cracking back against shoulder guards. First Claw responded in kind, chain blades revving and pistols rising in unison. Talos held Malkarion's bolter in one hand, aiming both barrels at the corsair leader's faceplate. Sirion chuckled over the vox.
"Another warm welcome."
"Lower your weapons," the corsair commanded. "Gate master," Talos warned. "It does not need to play out this way. Lower your weapons," he repeated.
"Talos," another voice called in greeting. From behind the corsair squad, another warrior, wearing the armor of the fallen chapter, pushed through his brothers. The squad nodded in acknowledgement of the figure, though he paid them no heed in kind. The corsair stood between both squads, blocking the line of fire. Talos lowered his bolter at once. Zal, Mercutian, and Uzas did so with greater reluctance.
"Brother," the corsair said, and offered his hand to the prophet.
Their armor clanked together as they gripped wrists for a moment, forming the traditional greeting between warriors since time immemorial.
"It is good to see you," the prophet said. "I'd hoped you would be here."
The corsair shook his head.
"I had hoped you wouldn't be. Your timing, Talos, as always, is venomous."
He turned to the warriors behind him.
"Stand down."
They complied, saluting as they did so. The leader grunted a reluctant,
"As you wish, Flayer."
"Come, all of you."
Varial's cold eyes drifted over First Claw.
"I will take you to Lord Huron."